Welcome to another episode of the Career Confidence Podcast, where today I sit down with the absolutely incredible Donna DeVart, who is the Managing Director of Fitted for Work. If you don't know about Fitted for Work, please click on the links below and go to their website, find out what they're doing. But they are basically helping women find meaningful employment and thrive in their working lives. The organization is a not-for-profit and they have helped over 45,000 women since 2005. And that is them just getting started. The conversation today goes in many different twists and turns. Donna shares her own story of why she's so passionate about making sure women have full-time employment and how empowering it is for women to earn their own money and make sure they have that financial security. So there's so many beautiful moments in today's podcast. So really tune in. And if you want to support Fitted for Work, like I said, click on the links below and become a mentor, become a volunteer, donate some clothes, or if you are a person who has got some spare finances that you can give, every little helps. So enjoy today's podcast. Let me know what your biggest takeaway was. And now over to Donna. Donna, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I'm absolutely delighted and honored to have you on. Now, can you just give the audience a bit of an introduction into yourself, Fitted for Work, an incredible organization that I am really excited to discuss with you today? So, Donna, over to you.
Yes, so my name is Donna DeZwart and I'm the Managing Director of an organisation called Fitted for Work. At Fitted for Work, we believe that every woman is entitled to economic security and independence, and we believe the best way for her to achieve that is through employment. So all of our services revolve around getting women ready for work, helping them find work, and then helping them stay in work and navigate their world of work.
Amazing. It's an incredible organization, one I followed for a long time now. Can you take us back into sort of, I guess, Donna's career, Donna's world, and what led up to you becoming now the Managing Director of Fitted for Work? Take us on that journey.
Yeah, so I suppose I can divide it into, you know, personal and professional, because I think you can't separate what happens in your personal life as a driver too. So it's a combination of different things. So if I think about it from a personal perspective, my upbringing was where both parents role modeled, you know, what it looked like to have equal roles in parenting both my sister and I, not just in caring, but also in financial contribution as well. So there was not one job that was more important than the other. And my father, who empowered me to believe that I could be whatever I wanted to be, whether that was the Prime Minister of Australia, and keeping in mind that, you know, I was born in the 60s, I could be anything I wanted to be. But he said, as long as I wore lipstick. And I know that that is a bizarre thing to say, but I suppose, and it sounds a little bit contradictory, but hear me out. So my father is now in his late 80s and unfortunately suffers dementia. But certainly back then he believed women were equal to men, which was quite a radical view, I suppose, of the time. He's always admired, respected women's capacity and ability to achieve, but he also really appreciated femininity and the qualities that that brought to any situation and role. And he didn't think women had to conform or act like men to be able to be successful. So I suppose the lipstick is a bit of a metaphor. And I know that's not for everyone, but that certainly was a big contributor, that my father, a man, actually believed I could be whatever I wanted to be. And then my own situation sort of when I became an adult, I got married very young. I was 23 when I got married, and my first husband died. And as a single mum, I was in financial ruin. And I know how powerless that is. So that was a huge sort of motivator or contributor for me. And then from a professional perspective, prior to working at Fitter for Work, I worked in the corporate setting. And to be frank, I saw behaviours and experienced some of those behaviours that went against my own values. And it's hard to be passionate about something that you're doing every day when you know the practices are just not right and they don't sit well with you. And I think from another professional perspective, another pivotal experience was weeks after my husband died, I was working in a role where I was the only female in a team, and there were rumours that there was going to be a restructure. I wasn't too concerned because I knew that I was the most qualified, had the most experience. But when I was called into my manager's office, so I knew that the writing was on the wall and it wasn't good. And when I asked why I wasn't, thought of for the role, he told me that he didn't think I had the emotional resilience to do the role, and I just knew that that was wrong on so many levels. And I knew that that was not a comment that he would have said to any of his male members of staff. So I think that couldn't have happened at a worse time for me, in amongst all the grief and still turning up for work. It taught me about leadership and compassion and equity. And so I think those sort of events all combined together have led me to this role.
Amazing. And thank you so much for sharing that as well. And it's why I asked the question, because I do think our past does shape us, and these key pivotal moments sort of, I guess, guide us into, it's not an accident while we end up in certain roles and certain situations. And I just want to take a moment to actually just say how incredible it is that you've had some really quite challenging moments in your life, and you have really, instead of, I guess, on one way you could have gone on, played the blame in the victim and why me, but you've actually taken that and gone, what am I going to do to help others now? What am I going to do to make sure that no other woman finds herself in these, or she does find herself in these circumstances? How can I help? And I think that's so incredible, because there's always two roads that we can take, and you've taken this path, which is truly inspiring. So when you found yourself, I guess your husband passed away, I imagine you're a single mom, so you've got a young child to support. Like, can you just talk to that a little bit more? Because I can imagine a lot of the women that come into Fitted for Work are maybe in similar positions. Is that sort of like how you've been able to, I guess, to like have that compassion and that relatability to the women coming through to Fitted for Work?
Yes, I think I would like to say that I eventually chose this path, but I do want to point out that, you know, a very human experience is when you've dealt with something that's really challenging is why me. And I think there was a time in my life where I did feel like a victim, and that life was so incredibly unfair. Why are some people dealt a hand of cards that are amazing, and I've been given this really crap hand, hand of cards? So I think there was a time that I did feel pretty bad about stuff, but I think you have to sometimes hit rock bottom to think, well, this might be as good as life gets, so how am I going to make the most of it? And that's when I really turned things around, and I accepted that, you know, everything is my responsibility in terms of how I choose to respond to situations. So, you know, what we do, and I suppose how we help women, is not by handing them a solution on a silver platter. It's about enabling them to find it within themselves, to find the solutions, if you like, to some of the issues that they face. And in terms of women coming to us and having experienced grief or loss. Yes, that's part of it. But, you know, if you think about the spectrum of life's experiences, they often hit women quite hard when it comes to financial outcomes, whether it's divorce, whether it's illness. So there's the whole, you know, range of experiences as to why women will come to Fit It for Work.
Mm-hmm. That's why I asked the question. So I'm curious to sort of see, like, what sort of is there a sort of a pattern in terms of like the sort of the women that you sort of look after the most? Is there more of one sort of group of women than others? Like, what would you say is sort of like that I guess the clientele is and the customers are Fitted for Work?
Yeah. So when I'm asked this question, I often say to people and particularly to other women that they're women like you and me. They're women that you know. They're women that you are related to. We all know of women who have experienced hardship in some way, whether it's through domestic violence, whether it's a woman exiting prison, whether it's being a refugee or a migrant, whether it's around death and divorce, or whether it's just around you're over 55 and the workforce doesn't want you anymore. There are so many things that can happen in one's life. And I think, you know, it's that if you think about the cycle of a woman's life and all the various stages that she might go through, they all present challenges, particularly when it comes to employment, starting a family, all of those things. So we all know women who have experienced those things, and often it is layered. So it won't just be around, for example, being a survivor of domestic violence. It might be that she is a refugee or a migrant on top of that. Or perhaps there is a disability involved. Or perhaps, you know, some financial distress as well. It's complex.
Mm. It really is. And in terms of, I guess, like, so from your sort of point of view now, you've come in, you sort of have this big role within the organization, managing director. Like, when you started with the company, how have you sort of seen it evolve? How many women have you helped during that time? Like, what's been the story for Fitted for Work? How did it start and where is it today?
Yeah, so, you know, great time to interview me and talk about Fitted for Work in 2025 because we're celebrating 20 years this year, which is an incredible milestone, not just for any business, but for a not-for-profit particularly. When the organization started 20 years ago, it started with two amazing women who are the founders of the organization, Renata Singer and the late Marion Webster. And they had an idea about how they wanted to help women, and they started basically with the clothing aspect, and it was out of someone's garage, just asking women to donate clothing. And from there, it's grown. So we're now 20 years down the track. We've been able to assist 45,000 women around Australia, and that number is growing month on month as the demand grows. And also, we're very much about practicing what we preach. We're in an industry where it is increasingly difficult to find the funding that we need to deliver the services because, of course, all of our services are completely free to women who want to access them. So as a sec, we've had to practice what we preach. So we can't be talking to women about economic independence and security if we don't have it ourselves as an organisation. So what we have done is we've started two social enterprises that are very successful. They now generate over 40% of our income, and that's really important, and we want to keep growing that. So we've seen this organization evolve as the need has evolved, and we are finding that level of complexity is increasing over time as well.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. I mean, that's just what you have done for women is amazing. And like you said at the start, women's financial security is so important. And there were some stats that I was hearing the other day about women ending up homeless. And I was quite shocked about that. Have you got any sort of data around that? Like, why is that happening? Especially women who I read that were in their sort of like 50s, it seems to be quite a big population. Is there any sort of stats around that that you know of that why that could be happening?
Yeah, so we know that women over 50 are the fastest growing homeless population in Australia.
Wow.
So think about what's leading up to that. Think about the different things that are leading up to that. So we know that early on in a woman's career, if she takes time out to have children, care for those children, she might be working part-time, she might be working casually. And we know that for women in this age bracket right now, superannuation had only just started. And even today, I don't think women are really taking the time to consider, you know, how their superannuation works and how that's going to play out later in life. And your best opportunity is to start young around that. So then think about what happens leading up to a woman, you know, hitting her 50s. So we know that the highest incidence of marriage breakdowns are probably going to be between the ages of 45 and 55. Now, what happens to assets during that time, and what happens when a woman hasn't been working full-time, working casually, or perhaps even being at home and caring for children? And then I think we need to touch on what's happening to a woman at that point around her own physical body. So we know that women will probably be in perimenopause at that point and going through menopause. And we're now talking so much more about the impact that that has on her mental health, on her physical health, and how tricky that can be sometimes with employment as well. We're starting to become much more aware, and I think even as women ourselves, you know, educating ourselves on what's happening with our bodies. So it's a perfect storm, right? And then we have ageism in the workplace, that there is a perception that a woman, you know, has lost her, I don't know, her abilities or you know, when in fact the opposite is true. You know, I'm now 58. I feel like I am just stepping into my power. You know, I am feeling really confident and comfortable with who I am, but it's taken me that long to get here. So, you know, there is a perception that a woman is, you know, not going to be as productive as she could be at that age, and it's just completely false. So then you think about what superannuation does she have and the systemic things that are in place to stop that. So I think it's a perfect storm, particularly for my generation of women. And also we have a housing crisis.
It's such a complex issue, and I don't think anyone has the answer, but I did, I was reading the other day that now women, when they take their maternity leave, are still going to get this paid superannuation. So I thought, right, these are good changes. These are good things that are happening now in our society. We obviously, I think we need to be doing more, like more childcare support and all of those types of things as well. And you're so right about the sort of like the age bias as well, because I think that as people get older, there's so much more wisdom that mm-hmm. they can offer the workplace. Like, you know, so many women, especially that I speak to, really do actually come into their prime later on in life. They've really discovered who they are. They don't take any rubbish anymore. Like, they're just like not afraid to push back. That's such a prime age for women. And I feel like it's just such untapped potential in the Australian workforce. It's really, really interesting. And ultimately as well, not many women and even men can even afford to retire. So we are going to have to get used to having an older population in the workforce and being really respectful of that workforce as well, because they have so much to offer us. It's madness. But when I read that stat the other day, I did feel a real sense of sadness because it's so poor. I feel like we're just letting women down on so many levels. That's really, really scary. So in terms of like then fitted for work, obviously, you know, when women come to you, how do you, can you, do you sort of like help them again with like any of their, like their confidence? Like what sort of like, so I'm just sort of thinking right now, if there's a woman listening to this and she's struggling a bit, she's just gone through something traumatic. Maybe that's through a divorce, maybe a loss, grief, whatever it is. What's some sort of, I guess, tools, strategies, ideas that you would offer a woman right now that's in that situation to really help her take the first step and have that courage?
So I think firstly, I would say I would encourage anyone to ask for help. I think sometimes as women, we think we need to find the answers ourselves or have the answers within us. You don't. You know, that's precisely why we are here and precisely why we have a team of experts that are ready to help you. I think the other thing is that, you know, earlier I talked about all the different types of women that will come through our service. Now, we see women who haven't finished high school and we see women with PhDs as well. So, you know, it doesn't matter what your background is, we can help you. And the reason why I say that is because someone might need an outfitting session because she's just escaped a domestic violence situation and she has literally left with nothing. For another woman who's been in the corporate environment all her working life but suddenly finds that her role has been made redundant, you know, she doesn't need the wardrobe, but she does need the resume. So what I'm getting at is everybody's journey into work is different, and that's why it's so important that we tailor, you know, our response to exactly where a woman is at. But what I would say, the one underlying or the one common denominator in, it doesn't matter who's coming through our doors, is confidence. It would be over 90%. So we have special programs that are all about confidence building because we need to start with ourselves. We can, you know, give you a beautiful outfit. We can give you the best resume. We can coach you on your interview skills. But if you're still speaking negatively to yourself, if you don't believe in yourself, then that does come across in some way, shape or form during your application process. So confidence is a big part around what we do.
I'm so glad we're touching upon this because I think you know this, Donna, but I've got a recruitment company and this, and I'm really passionate about women in technology. It is going to be a lot of the jobs of the future. So I'm really big on making sure that women don't get left behind in this next tech revolution. And one of the biggest things that comes up when I put a female forward for an interview is the hiring manager or someone, whoever's interviewed this with female, will say to me, she just wasn't that confident, or she failed to really sort of, I guess, sell herself and say why she was the perfect fit for the role. It always seems to come up, and I am doing my very best every single time I've got a female coming for an interview to make sure that she goes in knowing that she is so deserving of getting that role. I've explained to her that hiring managers don't just interview for the sake of their health. They've seen something in you. They want you to be good. They don't want to do 100 interviews. They want to, you just walk in and to want to offer you the job. So it's just, but it you're so right. It's like we can have all this external nice dress, well being well presented, but if we don't work on the internal piece, if we don't have a strong sense of worth and that sort of inner confidence, it is always going to hold us back. And I see it time and time again. And women will actually talk themselves out of a role as well. You know, so if I'm about to put them forward for a role, oh, Georgia, I don't know if I'm ready for this. And I'm like, yes, you are. So it's really interesting to me why women do this. And I've always, and then I was thinking at the start then when you were talking about your parents, especially your dad, put your lippy on, get out there and, you know, you can be whatever you want to be. I had quite a similar upbringing myself with my parents. My parents were very, you know, I guess encouraging. I never saw my mum put herself down in front of me. She never commented on her body, how she looked. She was always very, I guess, confident. Even I'm sure the days where she felt, you know, maybe she wasn't feeling her best. I think this is really, really important if we have got young girls, because I think it starts at these grassroots to really make sure we are installing these levels of self-belief and programming, because it does really set the stage and the foundation into adulthood. So it's just interesting what you were saying about your father there. I feel like, you know, we need to sort of encourage young girls, especially, to really have this strong level of self-belief. It was interesting as you were speaking then about that internal confidence. Is it nature or is it nurture?
I really think it's a combination of both, right? You know, I've had the privilege of having the most wonderful father who told me I could do or be anything. But there were times in my life where I had no confidence. And I think a lot of that was down to comparison, which is really unhelpful unless you're using it as a learning experience. But I also think it's about what you absorb externally, what our culture puts out there. So it's a really tough job to combat that. But, you know, that piece of advice you hear time and time again, speak to yourself like you are your own best friend. If you were encouraging your best friend to go for a job, you would not be saying to her, oh, you're not ready. You can only do a little bit of the job and not enough of the job. They're not things you would be saying to encourage your friend. But we tend to think it's okay to talk to ourselves like that, and at times, you know, even become quite abusive with ourselves, where we should be loving.
We've all done that.
Yeah.
I have a tendency to set ridiculous standards for myself. And when I don't meet those unattainable standards, I beat myself up. And I have done this a lot throughout my career. In one way, I feel like it's really driven me and pushed me to become better. In other ways, it's been really self-destructive. And I think that it's good to have standards. It's good to have expectations of yourself. You want to be good, but it's the perfectionism. It's the comparison. That's the toxic behaviors that we all need to be aware of. And can we just stick on comparison right now as well? Because this confidence issue is something I wanted to discuss with you today, because I feel like it's something that does hold women back. And comparison, it really is the worst, because nowadays we can log on to LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, all the social media platforms, and instantly get access to millions of other people, other women's, and we can compare ourselves instantaneously about what she's doing, what they're doing, how she looks versus how you look. And it's so toxic, and it is just so easy to erode our own confidence and feel like a failure and feel like we're not good enough when we're constantly comparing ourselves to filtered Instagram influencers and even like our friends and family that are just portraying their perfect life, when we know behind the scenes it's not that. So can we just talk upon that? Because I think that is a real key message I want to get across to women, is that nobody's life is perfect. Everyone's dealing with stuff. You never know what's going on behind someone's, you know, behind the closed doors. You should never, ever compare yourself to anybody else other than, I believe, the person that you were yesterday. And that, I think, if we could just focus on just making ourselves that little bit better than looking over the neighbor's fence all the time or looking on Instagram, that would definitely help us to build a bit more of that internal self-belief in ourselves.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And even we do it in the workplace. Not as good as her, not as good as him. I don't speak as well. It's like, we've got to stop doing it. We've got to start, like you said at the beginning, take responsibility. If we've identified that we've got some gaps, it's being like, right, okay, what do I need to work on? I need to work on this and this if I want to be the best that I can be, and have the courage to step out of our comfort zone and take that first step in doing that as well. But you must have gone on quite a growth journey yourself, and I'm sure built up your own career confidence over the years. What have you learned from stepping into this real sort of leadership role about yourself, and what sort of skills have you had to really work on over the years at Fitter for Work?
I think the hardest thing for me was probably around imposter syndrome. You know, do I deserve to be here? Am I the right person for the role? is someone going to be doing the job better than I can? You know, a lot of that imposter syndrome. And that took me a long time to work through. But you know what? I've sort of come out the other side thinking it's a bloody waste of time. The energy that it takes to talk yourself out of being an imposter, you're in the role, you're doing the very best that you can. You can't do any more than that. You know, and as you say, be honest with yourself and identify what the gaps are. But I think imposter syndrome has been one of the biggest and hardest challenges for me. And I think, you know, looking to other women to see how they do things, and rather than compare, learn from them, you know. And I think that's one of the great things about seeing women in very senior leadership roles. It enables us to learn from that. You know, I just think when one woman rises up through the ranks, it lifts all of us up, and there's so much we can learn from that. We're not competing against each other. There's enough to go around. You know, I think I've been very fortunate to work in an industry where, you know, we are predominantly led by women. There's more female CEOs of not-for-profits than any other industry. I wonder if the salary has something to do with that. But, you know, there's a really close network of women who work together and share knowledge. We're all trying to lift each other up.
I completely agree, and it's beautiful to see. And I started an organization just called the Sisterhood Club, which is all around sort of women in technology and supporting each other and building up a community there, because, you know, I think that a lot of women in tech, they go to a lot of networking events and they're like one of five women. So I wanted to create a safe space where women could come together and share their stories and feel inspired from each other, exactly what you just said then. But it's really interesting because imposter syndrome often comes up in really senior C-suite women. And they say to me all the time, it's like every single time I've gone to do something that feels massively outside of my comfort zone, that inner critic, that voice in my head, she starts, you're not good enough at this. Who do you think you are? You know, you'll never be a good leader. Like, you know, just all of these things come up. And it's just whether, I guess, we choose to listen to that inner
voice.
That's
right.
You know? Yeah, so how did you handle it when you're sort of getting those voices? What did you do to overcome it?
I think I really love and have adopted, you know, what Elizabeth Gilbert says around those voices. She talks about, you know, that voice really being fear and anxiety. You know, that you're not good enough, that you can't do the job. And what she says is, you know, you listen, you say thank you, and then you say, but I'm going to put you in the back seat now because I'm driving this car. I've heard you, but I'm driving this car now. So for me, it's not about not acknowledging that I have those fears, because of course we all do as humans, but it's about saying, okay, I've heard it, but it actually is not working for me. It doesn't make any sense. I know I can work through this issue or perform at this level, and I'm in control here, not the anxiety. And I know that's easier said than done, and I've had a lot of practice. You know, often people will say, oh, I don't know how you can stand on stage and you can speak to, you know, hundreds of people and not be nervous. And I always say I'm terrified. Every time I do it, I'm terrified. But I've learned how to work through that and, you know, put that voice in the back seat and I'm in control. And somehow that works for me. Might work for others too.
It definitely does work for me, because I'm smiling because when I didn't acknowledge the inner critic, when I tried just to silence her and got annoyed or upset that I was having those thoughts, it became worse. because then I was like almost having anxiety about having the thoughts, and then it was a spiral, and it just like, then you get all like the emotions attached to it and the physical symptoms, like I'd get really tight chested and I couldn't take a deep breath. And so it's like, first I think is acknowledging you're having the thought, the voice is there, and it's like, it's a protection, isn't it? It's like, you know, you're sort of waking up, you know, oh, this is new. This is, it's just your body's protecting you, and you just want to say thank you, like you said, thank you for trying to protect me, but I'm in the driver's seat, you're in the back, and you know, we're going to do this together, but quiet down back there and let me drive, you know. But is when I try to push it away, I don't want to think this, I don't want to feel like this, it just gave it more fuel. And I ended up then, yeah, going through quite a bad sort of period of anxiety, because I was just worried about getting that thought and getting that emotion again, had I actually just acknowledged it. And sometimes as well, I think there's a root cause to it. There's something maybe unhealed. There's a trigger there. There's, you know, and it took me back to a time in primary school when I had to get up and do a little talk about what I thought of a school trip. And I felt totally unprepared, and I was just sort of picked on, and all the kids laughed, as kids do back, you know, in school. And it's interesting what it brings up, that these unhealed little minor traumas that maybe from our childhood, maybe are from other things. And it's good to work through it. So anytime I feel those anxiety or those little uncomfortable niggles come up, I go, what's this sparked in me? What's unhealed? What needs to be addressed in me? I think it's like a really, it's being curious, I guess, yeah, is what I'm getting at. Not just trying to shut it out, because there's something to learn from that feeling. And what I get a lot of from people as well, especially when it comes to public speaking, it's about what will others think of me. You know, I think that's a really big thing that lots of women that I speak to as well. It's like the fear of what others will think. And I always think to myself, well, people are busy. You know, if you do come on and stuff up your words or fall on your face, whatever, they're not going to talk about it, you know, even an hour down the track. Everyone's so busy in their lives, they're going to have forgotten about it. But you're coming off and constantly beating yourself up and saying, that wasn't good, I've embarrassed myself. And yeah, it's interesting what we tell ourselves in our own head and how we are our own worst critic. But I love what you said then. I think it's so powerful, acknowledging that's what you're thinking, that's what you're feeling. It's really, yeah, really powerful.
And if I could just add to Georgie that, you know, I'm a big advocate for getting external help as well. And I think, you know, if that anxiety, you can't quiet that voice. You know, I have at different times in my life gone into therapy when I just couldn't seem to encourage that voice to sit in the back seat, and it was impacting my life in all sorts of different ways. So I encourage people, again, ask for help. There are experts out there who understand this. You don't have to solve every problem for yourself.
100%. Because I also think that inner critic comes up actually when life gets good.
Yeah.
And this is the other thing that I think doesn't get talked about enough. Yeah, it's anxiety comes when life is hard, but it also can pop up, and it has done for me in the past, when actually my life is in a really good place. And I listened to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about a thermostat, about how we've got this thermostat that if we tip over into like a, you know, say we're at 78 degrees and we're used to being at 78 degrees, and all of a sudden life gets a little bit good and the thermostat and the air in the room raises, and all of a sudden we find ourselves at 90, we will self-sabotage to bring us back to where we're comfortable. And when I heard that, it was like Gay Hendricks, he wrote a book called The Upper Limit, flicking on the upper limit switch. And I think what's happened in me in the past, when life has started to get good and I've been making progress, inner voice will come up even more and be like, this isn't going to last, you don't deserve this. Like, it's interesting how it doesn't just come up when life gets a struggle, it also can come up the other end as well. And it's acknowledging both. So, you know, I think that therapy and seeking help and having those professionals to turn upon, a mentor, whatever, is so, so powerful, because we can't do it alone. And no, we're all going through something at all times in our lives, no matter absolutely where we are. Yeah. So for you right now in your career with Fitted for Work, What's the goals? What's the mission? And also what I'd love to know as well is like, how can also individuals and businesses support that as well?
Yeah. So, as I said, we've reached a real milestone, in celebrating, 20 years, and all that we've achieved in that time, but we still are very ambitious. We'd like to get to a point where we can increase the income that we generate, so we're not reliant on really volatile funding sources like we have been in the past. We want to, you know, extend our reach so all of our services can be provided online. But one thing that COVID did teach us is that not everyone has access to technology. Not everyone knows how to use technology. And for some women, it's about, you know, they're not allowed to access technology. So we have a hub site in Parramatta that we're trialing, and this is going to be a very safe place that women can come to and access our services online with the help of a trained Fitter for Work staff member. But we'd like to roll out these hubs around Australia so that women do have a safe place to come if they can't do it at home. We're always looking at how we can extend our services. And, you know, we're currently looking at AI, for example, around how we might do that. A really great example of that is, why do you need to know how to write a resume? Like, why do we insist that people need to know how to write a resume? Knowing that or having that skill doesn't actually get you the job. All you need is a resume, a good resume. So we spend a lot of time with our staff who are experts, you know, coaching women through writing resumes and so on. But at the end of the day, if we could use AI to speed up that process and for something to be spat out, if you like, that's close enough that we can finesse, we'd rather spend the time coaching a woman on how to sell that resume. So if AI can do that for us, we want to use that technology. And then I think probably the third thing is around the impact. We're releasing a report that we've done in conjunction with economists. That's coming out in the next couple of months that shows the contribution and the value of women's work. So, for example, for every dollar you invest in Fitted for Work, it generates $2.22 into the economy. So we know how important the value of women's work is. And I think the other thing that I would feel really proud of is if we could change, I suppose, the perception and the way things are done in our industry, particularly around, if you think about, you know, the not-for-profit sector employs 10% of Australia's workforce. 10%. The majority are women. The majority of CEOs are women, but it's one of the lowest paid. So how do we keep, how do we attract, talent? Often women will take on these roles because they believe in the purpose. They believe in what they're doing. But we need to reward women appropriately as well. So the more income we can generate, the more say I can have over how much we're paying people. That is my ultimate aim, that we're able to recognise and reward the value of women's work and get that message across.
So powerful. So, so powerful. And I'm just so like impressed as well that you are thinking about AI and the impact that's going to have and how that can actually make applying for jobs easier and how you're coaching women on that as well. I think that's absolutely incredible. I think that, yeah, teaching women how to sell themselves, how to interview, how to present themselves is a far better use of time than how to write a resume. I think we can absolutely outsource and delegate that to AI and utilize that technology. Because at the end of the day, a CV is a CV. It's how you present yourself. And as long as those keywords are in there and it's all formatted nicely, that's the key thing that employers want to see. And that's, I guess, why recruiters have a job, because it's our job to actually then really sell the candidate in, because they're, you know, why this candidate over this candidate? And it's like our job to do that. But if you could teach somebody how to sell themselves, that's super, super powerful. I am curious, just sort of staying on the sort of the future of work and AI for a sec here, Donna. What's your biggest sort of fear as we sort of go into this sort of new working world, technology? Like, are you worried that women might sort of not progress and could fall behind as technology evolves? And, you know, is that something that you are thinking about with Fitted for Work at all?
Yeah, we are. You know, I have my own sort of personal fears around sort of privacy and different things around AI, which I'm sure everybody does. But I think it's the way we frame it, and particularly to women. So what women love to do and are usually very good at is productivity, you know, juggling many things at the same time. You know, there's no it's no mistake that, you know, if you go on Pinterest or any social media sites that, you know, when you look up organizing and, you know, organizing your closet or your pantry, that's all about productivity, right? So if we can sell AI as a tool that is going to increase our productivity and be an aid to us, not necessarily to do more, but to make our lives a little bit easier, you know, whether it's around, you know, I heard somebody saying they've used AI to type in, I want a menu for the week with the shopping list. I've got one person that's gluten-free in the family, you know, and AI can spit out that menu and the shopping list. How fantastic, you know, whereas it might have taken you an hour to come up with that. So let's use it as a tool. Let's use it to support us. And I think if we can sell that to women in that way, I think that's going to be really powerful.
I completely agree. Like a time-saving approach rather than, you know, this is going to take your job. And, you know, it's like, yeah, it's like, how can we utilize this technology into our day-to-day lives to make our life easier, to save more time, to have more time spent with our friends, with our family, and doing things that, you know, are going to bring us joy and, you know, and some, you know, rest and recharge as well. But I'd love to sort of like just touch upon now, just sort of going back to, you know, women and employment and just any sort of last words of, I guess, wisdom for women that do find themselves on the job market right now. You know, they've come out of a, you know, a challenging time. What is, like, I guess, your biggest piece of advice? Obviously, seek help, you know, reach out to organizations like Fitted for Work. You know, even if there's a woman right now that's in a challenging position, doesn't know what to do, she might be listening to this right now, she might be in an abusive relationship. Like, what advice would you have for her? Like, because I think it's so incredibly brave to get out of these sorts of situations. So how can she find her way out in a really safe way?
So I'm going to answer this question from the perspective of, you know, Fitted for Work.
Yeah.
So one thing that I always say and I believe is that money doesn't buy you happiness, but it buys you choice. Okay. So in order to leave a bad situation, it's very difficult to do if you don't have the income to do it, to create a new life for yourself. And if you're talking specifically about family violence, for example, we know that even after women leave abusive situations, often poverty goes hand in hand with that, and a woman can continue to suffer. Employment can change all of that. You know, for me, employment was the reason to get out of bed in the morning. I mean, obviously my children, but, you know, it was a reason for me to get out of bed in the morning, you know, put on something, put some makeup on, head out the door. For me, often it was the safest place for me to be. There was always someone who had a kind word for me or who thought I was doing a good job. It meant that I could make decisions about my future because I had money in the bank. And I was in dire financial straits after my husband died. I went bankrupt, so I lost everything and had to start all over again. But I made the decision to start again on my terms. And where I'm different to many of the women that we see is I never stopped working. I don't know what drove me to do that, even in my darkest times, but I always kept working. And I actually think that's what kept me alive. That's what kept me going. So work is not just about money. It is really important, but it can give us that sense of purpose, that sense of direction. And sometimes it sort of leads us through those really difficult moments. But I can't emphasize enough, if you are listening to this and you are really struggling, you are not alone. You are not alone. We're going to hold your hand through that process. You know, the services are completely free. Please pick up the phone. Call us. You know, we've heard every story imaginable. There's nothing you can tell us that we haven't heard before. There's no shame. And a lot of women feel shame around how they've ended up in situations that they have. And often it's through no fault of their own. Or if it's because you've made some really dumb decisions, hey, who hasn't? But there is a way out and it's never too late.
Beautifully, beautifully said. And it's just so comforting that there's organisations like Fit of Work out there that are really supporting women through some really, really challenging times. And I want to sort of just finish on now, like the, so obviously when they go to an interview with a employer, what role can that company do? Because I think this is also, you know, if we want to make sure that our women get a job but stay in the workforce, what advice would you have for corporations that are hiring women through Fitted for Work, and how can they support them back into the workforce as well?
Yeah, so firstly, know that we've got a database literally of thousands of women who are currently looking for work, women with the most incredible experiences and backgrounds, but women who are experiencing adversity for whatever reason. And remember, that can just be a temporary point in someone's life. I think it's about also looking at your processes and policies and how you support people. One of the, I think, the most powerful things that we do for organisations is we have a mentoring program. So once women do find work, if they wish, we can line them up with one of our volunteer mentors. And many of our mentors come through our corporate partners. And it's not a traditional mentoring program. We take them through the training and the police checks and everything are done. But it's not a traditional mentoring program in the sense of, you know, this is what you should do as your next career move. This is about answering the really tricky questions. You know, you're 6 weeks into a role, you're a single mum, both kids get sick, and you think, well, that's it, I've got to chuck the job in because I've got no one to look after the kids. I don't know how I'm going to get through this. This is where a mentor can say, well, hang on a minute. Let's think about different approaches to this, you know, and understands the situation. Those mentors come away with a greater level of compassion. If someone's turning up late for work every day, maybe there's a good reason for that. Maybe it's about a slight work adjustment that's going to make everybody's life a lot easier and make, you know, your employee a lot more productive. But I think we need to introduce a level of compassion. And I know there's a bit of backlash at the moment around diversity, equity and inclusion from some big organisations in the world. But I truly believe that if you can get to understand a person's circumstances and work with them on solutions, then, you know, the workplace is going to be a much more harmonious place, and it's going to be a place where people want to stay.
100%. And it's like, you know, we still need to have these conversations, because if we don't, things are going to go undressed, things aren't going to change. And at the end of the day, it's like women do take more of an active role, like as a percentage, in the caring responsibilities, whether that's of, you know, older parents, children. Like, it naturally does fall more onto the female. It's amazing to see so many more men, you know, be, you know, take the sort of more active role in the childcare. But I would say there's still a much higher percentage of women doing it. And yeah, sometimes, you know, their kid's sick, they're going to have to leave early. Like, this is just all stuff that women have to navigate. But I do believe that women can run a beautiful home and have a nice family life and have a successful career if their employer enables them to do that and doesn't sort of pull them into the back office every time they're, you know, 10 minutes late or half an hour late or have to leave early. I think we need to come from a place of understanding. Like, even my business partner, Pam, she's got two young children, and you know, some days she'll have a day mapped out of what she's going to do and when, and she'll have to go and pick her daughter up from school. And all of a sudden her day's upside down, back to front, but she'll just pitch clients if she's got meetings that day, say, look, this is what's happened. And she'll just front load or back load or fit it in when it works, but she'll still get it done. And I think that's what women do. Like, we still figure out ways of getting things done. Sometimes we can't, and that's okay. And that's where employers need to have compassion. But 9 out of 10 times, I know some amazing women with multiple different priorities, and they, I don't know how they do it sometimes, but they still manage to show up for their career and their family. And if you give people the opportunity and I guess the freedom to manage it, we're all adults, we'll get it done. But I think having these strict rules around start time, finish time and all that kind of stuff, like, it's quite restrictive and it's not reality. And that's the one good thing I loved about COVID was the remote work. And I don't want to see that change. And now employers are saying back in office and this and this and this. And I'm like, oh, I really hope that we do keep that flexibility, because that was a really positive thing that came from COVID, of that more remote working. So fingers crossed, you know, we keep that. I'm fighting for it. I really am. But Donna, is there anything that we haven't spoken about today that you think is really, really important for the listeners to know? You know, anything that you want to leave us with to think about, like anything that we haven't touched upon that you think we should have?
Oh, look, I think we've covered so much in our discussion. I'd probably just finish with, you know, how people can support Fitted for Work. And I think the first thing is support us by, you know, following, sharing our social media posts, our messaging. You'll know a woman in your life who needs our help. You know, pass our number, pass our details on to her. If you want to become a volunteer, if you want to become a mentor, we're always looking for more volunteers. We have a volunteer army currently of about 250 people. They are men and women, and we're always looking for more. And finally, you know, I'm not going to shirk around the fact that we need money. We don't currently receive any government funding. We, as I said, we're trying to generate as much of our own income as we can, but we're still 60% of what we do is still very reliant on those volatile funding sources. So if you can support us financially, we'd be very grateful.
I'll make sure I put all the links to Fitted for Work in the show notes. So please, if you're listening to this, you work for an organization or you want to mentor, volunteer, go and follow those links and find out how you can get involved. But Donna, I just want to take a moment just to thank you for all the amazing work that you are doing. And it's because of organizations like yours that it gives women a second chance. And without that second chance, you know, who knows where some people would have ended up. And it doesn't even bear thinking about. And we can't afford to lose organizations like Fitted for Work, because, you know, with all the stats coming out about, like we spoke about the homelessness and things, like it's a real issue. And if we don't get women in the workforce, I think as well as an economy, like you said, we're going to struggle in Australia. And we need to make sure that we are utilizing some of our best talents in this country. And I would say that a lot of that is women you know, in their 40s, 50s, 60s. So yeah, that's a message to all employers there as well. But Donna, where can I send people to find out more about you? Where do you hang out the most so people can go and connect and offer this podcast?
Yeah, so probably through our social media. And if you go to fitterforwork.org, really simple, you'll find out a lot about us. I encourage you to look through our social enterprises, particularly if you're a fashionista and you love anything that's pre-loved. We have an amazing social enterprise called The Conscious Closet. We help designer sales twice a year, which are incredible. Georgie, we'll have to make sure that you are on the invite list there for our VIP
yes,
night. but yeah, you know, check us out. You know, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love it if you did volunteer or contribute financially. But I also want to thank you, Georgie, for giving me this platform to be able to talk to your audience about something I feel incredibly passionate about, and that's the value of women's work.
It's been my pleasure. So thank you, Donna. It's been wonderful chatting with you. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thank you so much for doing that, and I can't wait to share the next episode with you.